the Financial Sense Lifetime Planning Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
Hi, everyone. I'm Josh Nunn.
And I'm Crystal Kessler.
And you're listening to our fourth edition of Millennial Mondays, where we explore interesting topics, trends, and key drivers inside one of the world's largest living generations, millennials. So, for those who graduated from college this past May, you're most likely coming face-to-face with the reality that student loan payments begin these next few months. Well, today is all about student debt, the myths, the truths, and some key ways to help manage those loan repayments. We're going to talk to you about how to make student loans your make them work for you.
You know, it's kind of funny because a lot of the times I feel like we wonder how we got here with all these student loans. Years ago, you know, we were just applying for FAFSA innocently. We're like, yeah, we'll take on a $5,500 loan and pay it back within 4 years. And then each year take on another loan. And the next thing you know, you're up to $27,000 in federal student loan debt, plus all that interest to pay back. Then, of course, you add your private loans on top of that just to add to the burden. And, you know, it's kind of funny because my dad wanted my sister and I to graduate in 4 years, and he would help us out with those first 4 years. But then watching that student loan debt just grow over the years was just motivation enough. So there should honestly, I feel like, be a course that you have to take and go through to understand how compounding works, because, you know, it's great when it comes to investing, but when it comes to student loans and it compounds daily, that's not so fun.
Totally agree. It's like the evil side of compounding.
Yeah. So, Josh, what are some of the biggest mistakes college grads make when they're repaying their student loans?
Yeah, this is some research that we did beforehand as I was kind of researching this topic, and there's quite honestly, I would say 7 of these top mistakes that we see a lot of college graduates make when they get to that point at the end of their college career when they have to come face to face with the reality of paying back their student loans. The first one is choosing the wrong repayment plan. Number 2 is missing opportunities to save money while they're paying back their student loans. Number 3 is actually failing to update your contact info with the lender. That's a big one. Number 4 is refinancing student loans without checking if it actually saves money. That's another thing we'll talk about later on in our discussion. Number 5 is actually defaulting on the loans. That's another mistake that a lot of college graduates make. Number 6, deferring or missing debt payments. And lastly, counting on bankruptcy or loan forgiveness.
Yeah, so all those I completely agree with. What are some of the key steps to take charge of your student loans?
It really needs to start with organizing your student debt. So I would say the first thing you need to do is determine what loans you have, what are the interest rates, what are the terms on each loans, what's your payment going to be, and when is each payment due?
Yeah, so 90% of student debt are all in the forms of federal student loans, which are managed by a few specific loan servicing companies. So just to name a couple, we have Nelnet, Great Lakes, Navient, etc. If you're unsure of who your loan servicing provider is, you can always log on to the National Student Loan Data System and click Financial Aid Review. And then you just kind of follow the prompts, put in your federal student aid ID to log in, and then it'll give you a summary of all your federal loans and which companies it's with. And don't worry, if you can't figure out where to go to or figure out who your student loan provider is, they will find you because they found me. So I received a bunch of stuff in the mail. Like Josh said before, making sure your contact information is up to date. Very helpful, but again, they'll find you. But I got my stuff in the mail. I created my login, and then once I was able to log in, I could see all of my loans. If you have any private loans, and you should know where they're from, but if you don't, you can always download your annual credit report for free on annualcreditreport.com. And it will be listed there.
Nice. So the next step I would say to taking charge of your student loans would be to determine what you can afford in terms of monthly loan payments. So as a general rule of thumb, right, your combined housing and debt payments shouldn't be more than, say, 40% of your gross pre-tax income. So that's income after your paycheck, once you receive your paycheck, it's before taxes are taken out. So, you know, if I have $1,000 a month that I'm making in income by working as a barista at a coffee shop, I don't want my rent, as a general rule of thumb, to be more than 40% of that. So if you are over the 40% ratio, maybe look at decreasing your expenses or work more hours to help make those loan payments just a little bit more manageable. And number three, the next step of managing our student loans is actually to make a student loan payoff plan. So have all of your loan balances in front of you, consolidate your student loans, can make your life so much easier and actually can help potentially lower your interest rate. As a subside of that, organizing your due dates is another really key way to making this a lot easier on yourself. Why would you want to have multiple due dates that you have to keep track of when you could essentially just have one due date where you pay all your student loans on the same day of the month? If you call up your loan lender, they will typically adjust your due date if you just call and ask, right? It doesn't always hurt to ask. So that way you can make all your loan payments on the same day, and that makes it a lot easier.
Yeah. And one thing to note is if you do consolidate your federal loans into one, the new interest rate will be the weighted average of all the interest rates throughout like the four loans that you have throughout your years. And then it'll also be rounded up to the nearest 1/8%. So working with a financial advisor might be the smartest decision to figure out if you should consolidate those loans. And just from personal experience, I did have my student loans through Nelnet. And one thing that every little bit helps, but if you do sign up for auto pay, and it automatically deducts money from your bank account, it'll actually lower your interest rate by 0.25%, which is very nice. So always call to ask, because there's always ways that you can work with your federal loan provider to either decrease a little bit of your interest rate that you're going to be paying, or again, like Josh said, maybe combining all of those loans into one due date.
Yeah, it never hurts to ask, in my experience. So the fourth key step to taking charge of your student loans, I would say, is actually paying down the loans with higher interest rates. So if we don't have the option to consolidate, or we just don't decide to go that route, we want to make extra payments if we can afford it, because paying down those high interest rate loans are going to save us a lot of money on interest and will allow us to pay off the loans faster, right? So loans with a high interest rate of, say, more than 7% are typically a good candidate for early repayment. Those are the ones that we really want to pay down faster than, say, the student loans that might be at a 3 or a 4% interest rate.
Yeah, and if you're going to make those extra payments to pay off your loan faster, make sure you find out from your loan provider how they actually allocate those extra payments. Like I said earlier, I had Nelnet, and when you make an extra payment for loans in repayment status, once the portion of the payment is allocated, it goes to a specific loan group first. And it actually, with Nelnet, goes to the highest interest rate first, and it'll pay off first any fees, and then it'll go towards interest and then the actual principal. So make sure that you're aware of where it's going first. And fees are generally like if you have a late fee because you didn't pay on time. So again, that's only if it's applicable. And if you're in an income-based repayment plan, which we are actually going to talk about later, payments are applied to interest first, then fees if applicable, and then to principal. So one of the questions I hear a lot is, should you pay off your student loans early?
And that's a great question. I think from a financial perspective, there are obviously pros and cons to paying off your student loans early, and we're going to get into that right now. So some of the pros, right? Paying off your student loans early obviously frees you from debt faster, and it provides you, you know, a more guaranteed return on your money by saving thousands of dollars in interest. So, you know, a great example of this to internalize, you know, let's take a 10-year, $10,000 loan for simplicity's sake, and let's say that the APR is 5%. So that gives you an estimated payment of about $106 a month. If we amortize this out, meaning we extrapolate this out, you'll pay about $2,700 in total interest in addition to that initial $10,000 in principal. If we doubled that payment to, rather than $106 a month, to $212 a month, you would get out of debt in less than half the time and for less than half the interest. So that's actually the power of paying off some of those student loans early. We're able to be debt-free faster, and we're able to save thousands of dollars in interest, potentially. Now, here's the cons. The other side of not paying off student loans early is simply just kind of a game of opportunity cost, right? So the best way to conceptualize opportunity cost is this. You know, money that's being used to pay down your student loans now is money that can't be invested in the stock market. So that's also money that can't be put into an emergency fund, and it's also money that can't be saved for special opportunities in life, like if we want to go on a vacation or we want to take a weekend in LA just to kind of get away from work. Those kinds of things we're sacrificing because we're using that money to pay off debt faster, right? So there's always another option that we have with that money, and that's part of that decision that you have to make as an individual is, where is my money best spent? So it's always better to be earning interest rather than paying it, but the lower the interest rate, the less incentive we have to repay that debt. So for example, if I have a 4% interest rate on a student loan versus you, Crystal, that has a 7% interest rate on a student loan, I'm actually more incentivized to continue paying that student loan because I'm at a lower interest rate. So maybe if I have extra cash flow, it might be better for me to invest that money because it might go further. Whereas you, because you have a high interest rate loan, it might make more sense for you to actually pay down that loan, get out of debt faster, and then invest the money afterward.
Right. And also, one thing to note is when Josh also talks about the opportunity cost of paying off that student loan debt faster, he really just means the extra payment. So don't pay your student loan debt. Make sure you pay the current balance, but as far as making those extra payments.
An excellent clarification for our listeners. Yes, I'm not advocating that we don't pay our student loans because don't do that.
It's a very bad idea. So there's a number of ways to actually reduce your loan payment if your housing and debt costs are over 40% of your gross income. What are those ways to handle this?
Yeah, so there's really three primary ways. The first one is deferment, right? So we can suspend our loan payments without harming our credit score. So this just means that we contact our loan officer and we say, hey, you know, I want to defer my loans to a later year or to a later month, whatever it is. Whatever works for your budget or for your, you know, for your short-term financial situation. However, it's really, really important to understand that the interest on these loans will continue to accrue. So resorting to this option may be best suited for those loans with a lower interest rate. The second method is the income-based repayment. So this looks like restructuring to a more income-based repayment plan that can reduce your monthly payment as low as, say, 10% of your monthly income. So rather than just paying a flat payment on a student loan, you can actually have the loan company configure a repayment plan that works around your monthly income. And the last way to reduce your loan payments would be to consolidate your federal student loans. So typically, combining loans into one loan and having one due date is almost always better than having multiple. Mm-hmm. It just makes it so much simpler and reduces the complexity. So refinancing your student loans, this typically also comes with qualifying first. So graduates who want to refi will need a stable job, whether it's entry level or not. They'll also need a good credit score or a creditworthy co-signer. So if you weren't aware, when you refinance, the lender will give you one big loan and they will pay off all the other loans altogether. So Credible is actually a company that will show you if you're pre-qualified to refinance, and it actually lets you compare refinance rates. So when you refinance, you get a whole new loan, a new interest rate. All of that can actually be checked out on credible.com.
Right. And just be aware that when you do refinance and with a private loan, those student loans won't be eligible for the student loan forgiveness or be able to be switched to an income-driven repayment plan.
Global economies are slowing down. Central banks are starting another easing cycle, and interest rates are heading lower. Do you know how lower interest rates will impact your income if you're retired or about to retire? Make sure you're prepared. Work with Financial Sense Wealth Management to help you develop a plan that provides you with predictable income no matter what happens in the markets. Don't take chances with your future. Let us show you how to avoid falling interest rates and loss of income. Call Financial Sense Wealth Management now at 888-486-3939. Let's work together to create a better path to your financial future. Call 888-486-3939 today. Advisory services offered through Financial Sense Advisors, Inc., a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Financial Sense Securities, Inc., member FINRA SIPC. Both companies doing business as Financial Sense Wealth Management.
So as we transition, the rapidly increasing cost of college tuition is literally no joke. I think it's an unpleasant reality, but I would say that it's nice to know that the majority of Americans realize this struggle. You know, right now there's a lot of businesses and corporations that offer support to new hires out of college to help manage some of that student debt. Hollywood is even producing movies relating to college students who have to afford college. Actually, Pixar is making a movie about Marlin trying to put his son through Fish College, and it's actually going to be called Funding Nemo.
That's actually really good. I'm going to have to watch that because...
I need to throw a joke in there because this is kind of getting dry, but...
That was good. No, but I mean, it's true. A lot of individuals are embarrassed by the amount of debt that they have. And I mean, I look at myself and I graduated with a degree in economics and I'm working in finance. And I used to think something went horribly wrong. How do I have debt? You know, like, however, debt, as I've learned, isn't necessarily a bad thing. It can actually work to your advantage because you build credit. And ultimately, if you ever want to get a loan and you want to make your first home purchase, you need to have a good credit score. Also, let's just say you have a 4.5% interest rate and you're paying off your loans, but also investing money into the market. As of today, the S&P is up over 17% year to date. So being able to get that kind of return, but also still making your payments towards your student loan debt is just going to work out for you in the long run. So sometimes getting rid of your student debt as fast as possible isn't the most financially savvy move. So don't be embarrassed if you have debt. Just continue to pay it off each month. And if you need help, reach out to a financial advisor or a financial planner because they can definitely walk you through your options.
Absolutely. So one mistake that recent college graduates make is actually they don't look at their options to decide what works best for them. So if you do this, what happens?
Right. So if you don't choose a repayment plan through your federal student loan provider, they'll automatically enroll you into the standard 10-year balanced plan, which is about 120 equal payments with level monthly payments. And guess who did that? This girl right here.
Hey.
So looking at your student loans can be daunting. And the other day I saw a meme that said, "Thank you, student loans, for getting me through college. I don't think I'll ever be able to repay you." But honestly, good news is that's not the case, and there's plenty of ways to pay them off.
And actually, Crystal, I didn't know if you knew this, but Post Malone has actually started his own student loan service in an attempt to lift the burden off of new graduates. Do you know what it's called?
No, what's it called?
It's called Post Malone's Postpone Malones.
Wouldn't that be wonderful? All right, I'm going to reach out to Post Malone because I need help.
All jokes aside, good news is there are plenty of ways to pay them off, especially through income-driven repayment plans. So with that, what are some of the advantages to income-driven repayment plans?
Right. So it lowers your monthly payment to a reasonable amount, which will allow you to save for retirement and paying off your student loan debt at the same time. When you're making pre-tax retirement contributions, it will actually lower your adjusted gross income, which therefore will lower your income-driven loan repayment plans because it goes off of your adjusted gross income. And then also, the interest that you pay on your student loan debt is actually a deduction that can reduce the amount of taxable income up to $2,500. So you'll receive a 1098-E from both your federal student loan provider and if you have any private student loans, and then you use that and you put it into TurboTax or whatever you use to do your actual tax returns. But it's really nice and it's really helpful, so you might as well use it to your advantage.
So with advantages, we also want to talk about the other side. So what are some disadvantages to income-driven repayment plans?
So it's very important to understand that reducing your payments actually increases the amount of interest that you pay over the life of the loan. So a lot of the times when you're paying down that loan, it's really going to that interest payment first. You're paying off the interest. But with that, it does sound bad that you're just paying off the interest and you have more payments in the long run. But I can tell you that if you do default on a student loan because those payments are too high and you didn't get into an income-driven repayment plan, and then you go into default, it's just ultimately going to hurt you more in the long run. About 70% of borrowers who defaulted on federal loans earned low enough incomes that they would qualify for the income-based retirement plans. And defaulting on a student loan is more costly and incurs obviously those fees. And then it also lowers your credit score. And then the worst possible thing you can do is if you do default on those loans, you actually can't discharge those student loans through bankruptcy. So you can definitely put yourself in a horrible position. So again, yes, there is a disadvantage to paying more in interest over the long run, but you're doing yourself more harm than good if you can't repay your student loans. Right. So what types of student loans are available?
So there's really two fundamental types, right? We have subsidized loans and we have unsubsidized loans. So what do those two words mean? I know I didn't really understand that when I was first getting out of college either. So subsidized loans are for full-time students that demonstrate need. So while you are in school, your balance on your loans does not grow. So once you graduate, then the interest starts to compound. Then we have unsubsidized loans, and this is where interest is charged the day the loan is disbursed. So say I just got into college at UCLA and I need to pay my first year of tuition. That interest is going to start accruing the day I take that loan out to pay for my tuition that first semester. So once you graduate, your balance is going to be a lot higher than when you started. That would be an unsubsidized loan.
Right. And also one thing to note, too, is whenever you do apply on your FAFSA, you're automatically qualified for an unsubsidized loan. So my federal student loans were all unsubsidized loans. And just to give you kind of an idea from a personal standpoint, one of my loans was $5,500, and by the time I graduated, the interest that accrued on it made my loan almost $7,000, just that loan, $7,000 in the end. Yeah, so, I mean, it does build up over time, so you better watch out. The direct consolidation loan that Josh has actually referred to earlier, it allows you to consolidate multiple federal education loans into one loan, so you have one single monthly payment, and this gives you access to additional repayment plans, which are those income-driven repayment plans, which we'll talk about. And applying for that is easy and it's free. So we're actually going to be attaching the link to apply for those consolidated loans to this podcast. And then just so you know, the interest rate on a consolidated loan is the weighted average of all four of those, or if you have four federal student loans, it's the weighted average of all four of those, rounded up to the nearest 1/8%.
Got it. So Crystal, what types of repayment plans are available for college graduates? And if you can, talk about the advantages and disadvantages of each.
So in finance, we always have to have fun acronyms to stand for everything.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. So, of course, each repayment plan is all acronyms. So we have the REPAYEE. So it's revised pay as you earn repayment plan. We have the PAYEE, which is pay as you earn repayment plan. We have IBR, which is income-based repayment plan. And then we have the ICR, which is income contingent repayment plan. So each of those plans...
What about ICU?
Do you see me?
I see you.
Oh, good. So each plan is different in their own ways to fit everyone's individual needs. But the things that all four of these plans have in common is the payments are recalculated each year based on your updated income and family size. So if your income goes up, those payments are going to go up. If you're married, both you and your spouse's income or loan debt will be considered. Any outstanding balance on your loan will be forgiven if you haven't repaid your loan in full after 20 years, and that's for undergraduate study. But if you have graduate loans, then it'll be forgiven after 25 years. You may have to pay income tax on any amount that is forgiven. So if you get through those 20 or 25 years, that amount that you have forgiven, that will be counted as income on your tax return. So watch out for that. Make sure if you do have an income-driven repayment plan that you set aside money for any amount that will be forgiven. And you can, again, work with a financial advisor to kind of figure out what type of forgiveness amount you'll have in the end. So,
and just to clarify, all those things that you just listed are all the common characteristics
yes.
of all these repayment plans.
Yes. And one thing also that we will be talking about later on in this podcast is all of these options are very important for you to be in if you are a candidate for public student loan forgiveness. So to kind of touch on how each plan is different, with the REPAYEE, the way that this plan is different is the monthly payments will be 10% of your discretionary income. And usually you end up paying more over time than the 10-year standard plan because in the long run, your payments are smaller and then you also are going to pay more over time, which that interest is starting to accumulate. With the PAYEE plan, the monthly payment plans will be, again, 10% of your discretionary income. And you also must be a new borrower on or after October 1st of 2007. And then if you have high debt to relative income, then this would be a good plan for you to have and be in. Your monthly payments will never be more than the 10-year standard plan. And usually, of course, you'll end up paying more over time than the standard 10-year plan. For the IBR, the income-based repayment plan, the monthly payments will be 10 to 15% of your discretionary income. And the monthly payments will never be more than the 10-year standard, which then, of course, you pay more over time than the 10-year standard plan. And actually, Parent Plus loans, they can actually use this repayment plan, so they can get access to do this by consolidating their loans into a direct consolidation loan. And then the very last one, ICR, not ICU, Josh, but ICR, Income Contingent Repayment Plan. The monthly payment plans will be the lesser of 20% of your discretionary income or the amount you would pay on a repayment plan with a fixed payment over 12 years, adjusted accordingly to your income, of course. Any outstanding balance on your loan will be forgiven if you haven't repaid your loan after 25 years. So not the 20 years from the previous, but 25. Usually you end up paying more than this 10-year standard plan. And then this one also qualifies for the Parent Plus loan. So Parent Plus can actually consolidate their loans and then through the direct consolidation plan and use this ICR repayment plan.
Right, not ICU, no. Just so we clarify for our listeners.
So what is the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Plan and who should apply?
Yeah, great question. So student loan forgiveness, typically this is a plan to work for a public service organization, right? So if we're working for any kind of government organization, maybe a family service agency, a 501c3 nonprofit, anything maybe in diplomacy or public safety and education. These are the kinds of people that can apply for student loan forgiveness. So within public safety, I mean, we have health services, we have emergency management, disaster response. If you're a firefighter, we also have educators, right? So if you teach in a public school or you work at a university, you're also included in this. We already mentioned nonprofit organizations. Peace Corps are also a part of this as well. You are considered somebody who works for the public service organization. And then we also have AmeriCorps. So if you have served in the armed forces for the United States, you also are included in the public service organization. So qualifying for public service loan forgiveness, there's a couple things we need to do. We need to work full-time to qualify. We need to have direct loans, and a way to find this out, we can log into My Federal Student Aid. And if the type of loan says direct in the name, then you know exactly that it's a direct loan.
At least they're obvious about it. That makes it nice.
Yeah, quite nice of them to do that. The other thing that we want to do in order to qualify is we want to repay our loans on an income-driven repayment plans, and that means making 120 qualifying payments on time.
Also, one thing I want to just interject too is it's really important that if you are going to try to get a public service loan forgiveness, that you do go into an income-driven repayment plan, because you are going to make those 120 qualifying payments, and they're going to be at a lower rate because it's based off of your income. So if you were to be automatically elected in the 10-year standard plan, that means you're paying off your entire loan within those 10 years. So if you're in that income-driven repayment plan, that's what's going to actually have your loan forgiven in the long run.
Interesting. And I guess at the same time, if you are on the standard repayment plan and you're seeking a public service loan forgiveness and not already repaying under an income-driven plan, you should change to an income-driven plan as soon as possible. So there was a recent report that the Department of Education actually rejected 99% of applications for federal student loan forgiveness. We've actually attached the actual report to this podcast on our website, so you can check it out.
Okay, so Josh, are there steps that students can take so their applications aren't rejected?
There's a few, yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up. So number one, we need to work in a qualified public service role, as we've talked about earlier. So we need to either work in public safety, education, for a nonprofit, in the Peace Corps, or for the AmeriCorps. Number two, we need to have a direct federal student loan or loans, right? So private student loans are not eligible for this kind of service. If you have FFEL loans, consolidate them to a direct consolidation loan to qualify. It's that easy. Number three, we also need to enroll in an eligible income-driven repayment plan, which is what we just talked about. So make the majority of your student loan payments under the income-driven repayment plan. That is the third thing we need to do in order to qualify for student loan forgiveness. The fourth thing is we must have applied for student service loan forgiveness and have been rejected. So I really don't understand why these are the four requirements for student loan forgiveness, but they're in this report from the Department of Education. These were the legit reasons they listed of why 99% of these candidates were actually rejected. So going forward, student loan officers and counselors are giving these four steps to students who haven't been able to get accepted into the student loan forgiveness program. Hmm. So the reason you were rejected is if you made at least some of your student loan payments under an ineligible student loan repayment plan, according to the U.S. Government Accountability Office report. And the underlying reason is potentially the fact that some borrowers may just not simply know about the temporary program because most loan officer websites don't have this information on it. So that sounds extremely dysfunctional, and it is. So they need to do a better job of listing these kinds of steps so that students are more informed about how to apply successfully to get student loan forgiveness. Because we understand that it can be a very confusing multi-step process, but if those steps are clearly defined, then it's going to be a lot easier for students to get it. And the money isn't the issue also, because we know that the federal government actually puts aside hundreds of billions of dollars for student loan forgiveness programs like this one. Except in this most recent report, they were only able to give a fraction amount out because so few were able to qualify.
They're just trying to make us work so much harder for it. We already got our education. Do we need to work that much harder?
Honestly. So the best way to apply for temporary expanded public service loan forgiveness is really just two easy steps. And if you remembered anything today, it should be these two easy steps, right? So we want to email fedloanservicing at tepslf@myfedloan.org to request that the Education Department reconsider your eligibility for public service loan forgiveness. And we'll put those steps on the website as well under this podcast. And number two, we also want to include the same name under which we submitted our public service loan forgiveness application the first time, as well as your date of birth in the email. Crystal, in closing, we've kind of gone over a lot today. Any parting thoughts for our listeners?
Yes. So just don't be afraid of your student loan debt. So many of us are obviously in the same situation. And as long as you have a plan in place to get ahead of it, pay it off on time and choose the right plan, you'll be in great shape. Use the debt to your advantage and use the interest paid to lower your taxable income on your tax return. If you're someone who does hate debt and feels better with your finances having zero debt, then continue to make those extra payments. And in the long run, you'll save more by paying less in interest. And for those of you who utilize a plan, pay your balance off each month and start investing into the market for your future.
So, Crystal, if any listeners wanted to get in touch with you, how could they do so?
So if they want to get in touch with me, they can actually call into our toll-free number. It's 888-486-3939. Josh, where can they get a hold of you?
Yeah, so you guys can reach me or Crystal at both of our emails, of course. My email is josh.nunn@financialsense.com. And Crystal already gave out our toll-free number. However, if you have questions about this podcast, specifically questions or comments, feel free to give us a ring at 1-833-ASK-FSN. Well, with that in mind, we're out of time. Until Millennial Mondays return, we hope you have a fantastic week.
Thank you.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.